This week on Daiwa, we're featuring Decatur County. An illegal surgery has fatal results.
Welcome to Daiwa, the first Iowa-focused true crime podcast, where there's 99 counties and a murder in every one. These are your hosts, Beth LaValle and Allie Tulin.
Decatur County. Can't say I really know where that is.
Same. I had to look it up, but on a map, I would describe it as a southern county almost in the middle of Iowa. So it's on the border of Iowa and Missouri. And fun fact, it's also named after the hero of the War of 1812, Stephen Decatur Jr. But Stephen was not from Iowa.
Okay. So the towns Lamoni and Leon are located in Decatur County. I love Lamoni because of NPR. They must have some sort of station there or something because they always end with, "And Lamoni." That's my best radio voice.
I love it.
Lamoni is probably known best for Graceland University, which is actually Caitlyn Jenner's alma mater. Ooh. Jenner had received a football scholarship, but while playing had a knee injury. The Graceland track coach then encouraged her to try the decathlon, which she later won a gold medal for at the 1976 Olympics, as we all know.
Very cool.
Just a warning for everyone, this is a sensitive case around the topic of abortion, so please take note of that now and pause this episode if this is sensitive to you for any reason. And finally, I will go into a very quick recap of the history of abortion in America. Abortion laws didn't appear until 1821, and abortion before quickening, which is typically between the 4th and 6th month of pregnancy, didn't become illegal until the 1860s. Before then, a woman could get an abortion without legal, social, or religious repercussions. At the turn of the 19th century, Victorian sensibilities began dictating how women should act in society, and by 1910, abortion was illegal in almost every state. It would not become legal again until 1973 with the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court ruling.
All right, so it is 1901. Vice President Theodore Roosevelt said the famous phrase, "Speak softly and carry a big stick," at the second best state fair, which is Minnesota. New York becomes the first state to require automobile license plates, and President William McKinley becomes the third president to be assassinated.
You always forget about McKinley.
You do. At this time, Maud Stone is a 20 or 21-year-old girl described in the Sioux City Journal as one of the prettiest and wealthiest girls in Decatur County. She was the daughter of a wealthy and prominent Englishman who had settled in Leon, Iowa, and Maud's father had died and left a valuable estate to his widow and kids. Maud graduated from Leon's high school with high honors, and the paper also quotes, "Never was there a breath of suspicion against her virtue or conduct."
Those Victorian sensibilities really coming in strong. So after graduating high school, she moved back into her parents' home in the country. The Hammond family moved in nearby. Their family was described as poor, but Maud took interest in their son Ira, who was not yet 21. Maud's family supposedly tried to discourage the relationship with Ira, and she acted like she obeyed, but secretly they kept the relationship going. Both Ira and Maud would write to each other and leave letters in a hollow of an old tree. At some point during their secret relationship, Maud became pregnant. And of course, they panic and decide something has to be done to avoid the disgrace. Here's a snippet from one of Ira's letters to Maud. "If we get married this spring, we won't have to do that way anymore, will we, darling? But Maud, I think of..." Shoot, this is going to be hard.
Give us your best Ira voice.
"If we get married this spring, we won't have to do that way anymore, will we, darling? But Maud, I think more of your name than I do the child. I wouldn't have you ruined by having a child before we were married for anything. You know as well as I do what people would say, don't you? Maud, you don't know how much I enjoyed myself Sunday night. You know when." Oh my God, I can't get through this. "I never had opportunity to stay that way before, did I? Did you like it better? But, my lord, Monday night, I never spent such a night in my life. The folks said they never heard such rolling and groaning as I did. I had the damnedest dreams you ever heard of. I only wish one of those dreams I had was so now. It was just as real as could be. Well, I must ring off and go to bed. I suppose you will get tired before you get this read. So good night, my dear, sweet wife.
Beth, you deserve an Oscar.
Thank you. Clearly I don't, because of the laughing fits, but...
So the couple knows of Dr. J.W. Crawford in Lamoni, Iowa, who offers an operation that could help their situation. And Lamoni is about a 20-minute drive away from Leon. So very doable. On January 22nd of 1901, Maud lies to her family that she's traveling to Mount Air to visit some friends and relatives for 2 weeks. She arrived in Lamoni by train and went straight to Dr. Crawford's sanitarium. And just FYI, a sanitarium is just a fancy word for a doctor's office back then. A few days later, Ira Hammond receives a letter from Dr. Crawford telling him Maud is sick and he should come with his mother. On January 29th, Ira and his mother arrive in the morning, but Maud dies that night. Ira and Dr. Crawford write a note to Maud's mother telling her that her daughter has gotten sick on the train and has been at the sanitarium for about a week. He also suggests to come at once. The Stone family was shocked because they didn't know Maud had plans to be in Lamoni or that she had been sick. Maud's mother decides to go straight to Lamoni and finds Dr. Crawford preparing Maud's body for burial and refusing to allow an examination. He tells her that Maud had come to him sick and her appendix needed to be operated on due to appendicitis. To the Stones, the story just didn't add up.
Maud's family insisted that an autopsy be performed, and the coroners found that Maud's death was the result of a criminal operation for an abortion. A grand jury then investigates Maud's death and indicates Dr. Crawford and Ira Hammond. They demanded separate trials, which was granted. The state had attempted to prove Ira, who is now 21 and married, was actually instrumental in persuading Maud to have an abortion, and through evidence, it was discovered that Maud had an abortion prior to this fatal one. Months before visiting Dr. Crawford, Ira and Maud had visited a Dr. Eaker of Leon, Iowa, to have Maud examined. Dr. Eaker advised Ira to marry Maud because she was pregnant. The couple did not take Dr. Eaker's advice, and based on some of the letters, it was because Ira was not old enough and pretty poor.
Poor guy.
Not a good look. Ira's trial was originally set for Decatur, but moved to Ringgold County. Defense attorney C.W. Hoffman, who was also Dr. Crawford's attorney, made the argument that Maud had the, quote, money and mental capacity, unquote, to lead and control Ira Hammond, and that because she had an abortion prior to this one without the knowledge or consent of Ira, it was 100% her decision to have the abortion. Ira Hammond was acquitted in Mount Air on April 26, 1902.
Dr. Crawford was actually tried twice. So first, in November of 1901, he was found guilty of murder in the second degree. He was sent to the Fort Madison Penitentiary for 13 years. Also, his certificate of practice was revoked by the State Board of Medical Examiners. Crawford was then released on a $10,000 bond pending the appeal to the Supreme Court, which did grant him a new trial. At a second trial on April 13, 1905, in Osceola, it was said that Crawford lost his nerve and convulsed when he was sentenced again. His wife and two daughters were also in the room and crying. His attorneys were wanting to file a motion for a new trial in which the jury could come back with a manslaughter verdict instead of a second-degree murder.
The court said the letters written by Ira and Maud proved there was no evidence of conspiracy. The judge overruled a motion for a new trial. When the judge gave his final statements, he basically said it would have been a lesser crime if Dr. Crawford was the family physician and lived a few miles away, but because Dr. Crawford had performed an illegal surgery and charged for his service, he was getting more time in the penitentiary. Dr. Crawford paid a bond of $12,500, which is almost $400,000 in today's money, and his attorneys planned to take the case up with the Supreme Court.
During the Crawford trial, a few letters between Ira and Maud were read aloud. In them, it proved that Maud had been pregnant before, and that that child was also a secret and had been buried near the Stone's house. However, for the present abortion, it was confirmed that Ira had set up the operation for Maud with Dr. Crawford and had visited her during her time at the sanitarium.
So now it's 1910, and after spending a few years at the penitentiary, the governor of Iowa grants Dr. Crawford a full pardon. Since his conviction, it's reported that Dr. Crawford's wife had been working in Des Moines as a nurse to support their family. She had stayed by him and worked hard for his pardon. Just a year prior, the people of Lamoni, Iowa, were contending against the pardon of Dr. Crawford, as recommended by the State Board of Parole. Maud's friends claimed that they had evidence that two abortions were performed on Maud by Dr. Crawford. The first had been in August of 1900, and the second and fatal one was performed on January 22, 1901. Maud had died on January 29th.
So it's not known if Dr. Crawford performed both abortions, but for sure that fatal one. We did some searching for what happened later on in life to Ira and Dr. Crawford, but found nothing. Guessing they both might have left Iowa after everything that happened. But I'm ready to call TAPS and discuss a few things if you are.
Let's do it.
Hey, TAPS. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
All right. This week, we're in Decatur County talking about Maud Stone and the illegal abortion that happened. But first of all, have you ever been to Lamoni?
Yes, I have. Home of Graceland College. What famous person went to Graceland College?
Oh, we already covered that. Caitlyn Jenner. Jenner, now Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, okay.
Not a Kardashian.
No.
All right, diving right in. Iowa has some pretty controversial laws to this day when it comes to abortion. So have you ever experienced cases with illegal abortions or found unwanted babies or anything like that?
Well, I mean, since Roe, there's really not been a need for a legal abortion. I've had several dead baby cases, some of them being, you know, young mother that delivered a kid at home and tried to cover it up, or, I mean, I don't want to get too graphic, but extinguished the baby's life in certain ways. Some of these, I even had a case one time where the girl didn't think she was pregnant and she delivered the baby at home and the baby died. So it happens once in a while, but the abortion part of it's been pretty limited since Roe. So Roe was decided, I think, in 73. So it's been pretty calm since then.
In your opinion, was Dr. Crawford really guilty? And like, what about the boyfriend, Ira?
Well, I don't know if the boyfriend, I mean, I guess you could have charged the boyfriend with accessory. There was, before Roe, statutes in most states that prevented abortion, made them illegal. And so if he could have been charged maybe under the felony murder rule, which says any person involved in a felony in which a death results, they are charged for the murder of that person, regardless of their conduct, because they, you know, have obviously risked much by committing a felony. And so the death results from it. So that could have been one of the strategies. It could have been under the old abortion statute that they charged him. I mean, at the very least, probably had a medical malpractice case the way it sounded.
Okay, so I was going to ask about that. Have you had any experience with that? And like, how difficult is it to find medical malpractice?
Of course, if you're talking about medical malpractice, you're talking about a civil case as opposed to a criminal case. And so the burden of proof is less. It's preponderance of the evidence instead of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Medical malpractice cases are brought in this country every day. Lots of people, did the doctor, you know, breach the duty of care to the patient? The patient had significant, you know, warning to the dangers of the procedure, all that kind of stuff. I would guess back in that time area, it was pretty difficult to prove a medical malpractice case. I mean, obviously, you commit, you know, if you're doing a medical procedure that was illegal by the statute, i.e. abortion, it would have been probably easier to bring the case to court.
Have you ever been in a courtroom where they have had to read texts, emails, or love letters in court like they did in this one?
Well, it happens all the time. If they're trying to prove communication or trying to prove some connection between people, the only problem is a lot of times you get into the hearsay rule with stuff like that, because if it's third party and things of that nature.
Well, and I'm sure it's easier today with like texts and it's easy to prove, but love letters, they just like really sensationalized that in the newspaper and were saying how big of a deal it was.
Yeah, it seemed a little bit strange that they concentrated on that. But again, remember, the public and this and the news media, especially back in those days, was pretty salacious. I mean, that's the kinds of things they concentrated on.
So in these old cases that we have been covering recently, it seems like there's kind of this rich versus poor attitude that happens a lot. Do you think that's changed much?
Yeah, I think maybe. I don't. You know, it seems like now, especially in urban areas, you have a lot more poor versus poor crime, to put it mildly. A lot of people are victimized in poor neighborhoods by people that also live or stay in the neighborhoods. I think these types of crimes, like the one from Decatur County, are more rare nowadays, where if some rich girl and poor guy get together or vice versa, and there's a kind of an outcry over it.
Any final thoughts on this case?
It's a difficult one, and this is one that really highlights how society has changed and how the law has changed in the last, you know, 120 years or 130 years. You know, now, if she would have died due to an abortion by a doctor, it probably would have been a medical malpractice case in civil court. Nobody would have went to jail. Those kinds of things. So it just shows you how much our society has changed in that amount of time.
I guess I want your guys' final thoughts on, do you think Dr. Crawford should have had his medical license restored?
I don't think I know enough to say one way or the other. It's just, part of it would be the reading of the abortion statute back then, and did he willfully do these things and stuff? So it would be tough to say.
Beth?
I guess same. I don't want to share my thoughts after the expert, but I agree that I'd like to know if any of it was willful or like not, or I guess intentional in her death. Otherwise, yes, I would like to see it restored.
I think my issue is back with that judge who gave him the sentence and said, if you would have been her doctor trying to help her, it would have been different, but because you charged for it and she died, I don't know why that just seems more scandalous and like he's not trying to do the best thing.
See, I sort of disagree. I feel like if she went to her own doctor, A, her family would find out, and B,
that's true,
I assumed her family doctor wouldn't perform that because it was illegal and she was paying because it was an illegal black market service.
Crazy. I don't know. Well, thanks again for joining us, Taps. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Oh, hello there. As a marketer, I hate promotions like this.
Same and same.
But I love content.
Me too.
So if you like our content, give us a like, follow, share, subscribe, note, fax, literally anything you think would help us continue making Daiwa a success.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.